The more I've been able to learn about gay rights and equal pay and gender equity and racial inequality, that it all intersects. You can't really pick it apart. It's all intertwined. Megan Rapinoe, the USA's World Cup hero. Meet me for kisses, you are forever in love. Welcome to the ELI's Finding Chicago Global Perspectives podcast series for AEPP 2019. I'm your host He, and I'm currently enrolled in the Middle Eastern Studies Master Program in the University of Chicago. Today, we will be exploring the topic of the consequence of gentrification, loss of ethnic diversity. In our neighborhood project in the AEPP, my teammates and I headed for the so-called gayborhood, Boys Town. We departed from Hyde Park and took the 146 bus and 6 to the north for about 14 minutes. At the first sight, we became so impressed by the colorful scenery of the place. But after a while of interview, two questions emerged from my mind. My first question is, why there are nearly no black people on the street, which is totally different from the situation of Hyde Park in the south of the city? And what made me more puzzled was that, on the main street, we saw a large and conspicuous mural of an African-American man with a decoration of rainbows. Also, I have read some pieces of the early movement led by African-American heroes from LGBTQ groups inscribed on the landmarks on the two sides of the main street. How can this self-contradiction between the described world and reality come into being? And secondly, we have met with a street family next to a kindergarten. And many apparently street girls appeared in the gay bars. So why have the different people swarmed to this community? Apart from these families and individuals, some entertainment industry also has rolled in. In our interview, an old woman who has lived in this community for about 40 years said that she has witnessed establishment and replacement of the small businesses all these years. It seems that Boys Town constantly attracts attention and involvement from the outer space. By that I mean the street world. However, as everyone knows, at first, this community evolved as a place of segregation for the gay people, which were clearly excluded from the mainstream in the society. But now, it becomes a fancy place for stylish white people to hang out. So what happened over these years? Where are the gay people of color? Is this really an equal place for gay people as it should have been? To get closer to the answer to these two questions, I have did some research for the related history and current situation based on the results of our interviews, and we'll present them to you in the following. In order to give a comment on Boys Town's current situation, we need to know its history, the history of gentrification. In 1998, Mayor Daley planned beautification projects to four neighborhoods in the city. Three of them were identified with Chicago's major ethnic groups, and the other one was Boys Town. Jason Warner, the preeminent scholar on Boys Town, states in his essay, Gayborhood Change, that its purpose was solidifying the neighborhood's official status as the gay enclave. In Honor's essay, according to Brown Saracino, this gentrification can be divided into two phases. In the first phase, the white gay men set up some clean-up projects and raised the rent prices to push the people of color out of the community. These white men may be driven by dissatisfaction that they were marginalized from the access to their white and male privilege in the housing market because they were gay. In the second phase, white young professionals with high economic capital started to swarm into the trendy new area. More obviously, in the recent years, the gay residents have been displaced by straight white women and families. Amin Gaziani, a professor at the University of British Columbia, whose research topic is sociology of sexualities, holds the belief that queer people are increasingly accepted by society, and straight people are more regularly integrated into gay neighborhoods. For this circumstance, Warner further explains that the late-stage gentrification has converted Boys Town from a sexuality-segregated area with a racially diverse and community-focused bar culture to a gay Disneyland that sells commodified gay male bar culture to straight white people, largely women who live in the area and consume its nightlife. This gay lifestyle that includes a special kind of nightlife and shopping is consumed by many people, both straight and gay. According to one of Warner's interviewees, George, a mid-30s white gay man,
"It's less gay, it's less diverse, it's more of a tourist spot."
And another interviewee, Sam, says that the result of these fancy changes is that
gay men in this bar feel objectified, like they're there for straight white women's entertainment. It's become this pattern zoo where they come and look and gawk at the gays.
In a word, this transformation of Boys Town into a thriving gay Disneyland represents the assimilation of the neighborhood into a traditional mainstream of the society. However, the consequence of this assimilation caused by gentrification can be more reflected in the lack of ethnic diversity. Queer men of color are now regarded as outsiders in this space, which was created for the sake of eliminating the discrimination for the sexual minority in society. Similarly, in order to analyze the problems, we have to begin our discussion with the history. As for the overall background, Henrik stated that even today, Chicago remains one of the most segregated U.S. cities. White residents live in the north side and surrounding downtown, while the black ones in south and west, and the Latins in southwest and northwest. And in the mass media, queer people's race is often unmarked, and thus raised white. As Moore articulates in her book about black lesbian families, queer people of color are often invisible. And Boys Town, housed within the Lakeview community area, is indeed a white middle-class gay enclave. 84.9% of its residents are white, and the median household yearly income is $75,882. One thing that needs to be mentioned is the Take Back Boys Town event in 2011. Based on the depiction from Jennifer K. Fellner, the outstanding scholar on health inequities among marginalized youth, in that summer, a group of young black men who were fighting on Houston Street were recorded in a video, and the video was later leaked to the mainstream Chicago media, prompting a drastic discussion about the sudden crime wave in Boys Town, which was ascribed to the young black and the Latino men hanging out on the street. The Take Back Boys Town event and accompanying Facebook page were formed shortly after. Residents of Boys Town would band together and hang out on the street to show those that don't belong here that the neighborhood would not be intimidated. The event, which excluded the queer people of color from this neighborhood, was deemed as racist and was protested by a queer community group, Gender Just, and many other organizations. According to a report written by Katyn Sawson, who is a journalist of the Windy City Times, the major gay newspaper of Chicago, the CEO of the Windy City Times, Modesto Tico Valle, similarly believes that the Take Back Boys Town event was driven by racism.
I heard from a lot of young people as a roller coaster of emotions. Anger that they were being blamed for something that they had no role in. Sadness because they came into a community that they thought was going to embrace them, be safe after being beaten, raped, abused in their neighborhoods, their families. They kind of saw things as their safe haven and their family. The community, not everyone but some, slammed the door in their face in a very ugly way.
Furthermore, from Fellner's interviewees in his investigation, we can know that in Chicago, the status of South and West Side outsiders engenders a sense among youth of color that they are unwanted and unwelcome in Boys Town and should stay away from the North Side. Firstly, the youth of color are banned in a way from accessing services. For example, youth researcher DeAndra explained that local police treat youth of color differently than they do white residents or visitors. If the police considered they threatened or were involved in physical or verbal fights with peers or staff, they could be banned from the neighborhood, which is not uncommon. While some of Fellner's informants acknowledged that their ban was justified, others believe that they have been banned for unfair reasons. This may partly explain that why I didn't see many black people when I was in that neighborhood. Secondly, another overt discrimination of the youth of color is a kind of tokenization. Fellner believes that the various gay organizations tokenized them for the sake of bringing in donations and generate programmatic funding. Several of his informants suggest that LGBTQ organizations in Boys Town are motivated to serve youth of color primarily to keep the organization afloat. According to Fellner, this ironic and self-contradictory juxtaposition of tokenizing youth to generate money for the organizations while preventing them from employment within the organization was perceived as a means of exclusion from full membership in the LGBTQ community. So, this may be able to explain why I have seen so many depictions about black people across Boys Town, but can find a real black man nowhere. In my opinion, the history and development of Boys Town don't seem like a segregation, but much like exploitation. Yes, this is a friendly and safe place now, but is it really friendly enough to everyone? I have to say, that remains a question. Should it be defined as a gayborhood now, or just another gentrified Disneyland with a fancy and fresh theme of homosexuality? To be honest, I don't know the answer. But maybe after another two decades, time will finally tell.